From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, fractivists hope to play a role in New York's presidential primary. We follow Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign visit to New York's Capital Region, and our political observer Alan Shartok speaks with NYPERG's Blair Horner about the state budget process. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Fractivists, as anti-hydrofracking activists are called, hope to play a role in New York's presidential primary. They're asking Democrats Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, as well as Republican candidates, to take a stand against the Constitution Pipeline and other natural gas pipelines that, if approved, could crisscross the state. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Hey, we're going to get this rally going. Everybody here? Yes!
More than 200 fractivists held a rally to oppose natural gas pipelines in New York and to call on Governor Cuomo to ban them. Robert Kennedy Jr. is the attorney representing the opponents of the Constitution Pipeline through the Pace University Environmental Litigation Clinic, which he founded.
The rules are designed to favor the dirtiest, filthiest, most poisonous, most destructive, most addictive fuels from hell, rather than the cheap, clean, green, wholesome, and patriotic fuels from heaven.
The very politically involved fractivists are hoping to play a role in the presidential primary in New York as well. They want Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders to go on record against building more pipelines for fossil fuel-based energy. Kennedy, who did not say who he backs in the primary, says he has also written both campaigns, asking for their views on the issue. He says the movement has already convinced Governor Cuomo to ban fracking in New York.
These people are people who vote. You can see these people came from all over the state today to come out here on a freezing cold day and stand in front of the Capitol for several hours and then march to D.C. You know, there's two things that drive politics in our country. One is money and the other is intensity, and you're looking at intensity right here.
In 2014, many fracking opponents voted for Zephyr Teachout against Cuomo in the Democratic primary, and Teachout won several upstate counties where fracking had been proposed. Teachout was against the natural gas extraction process. Shortly after he won re-election, Cuomo outlawed fracking in the state. Cuomo, who is the ex-brother-in-law of Kennedy, has so far not taken a position on the pipelines. His environmental agency says it will review the pipeline permits and make a decision based on sound science. The Democratic candidates for president have already voiced their views on fracking in a March 6 debate on CNN. Clinton told Anderson Cooper that she supports fracking only when local governments approve, when companies reveal what chemicals they're using in the fracking fluids, and if they can prove that they are not polluting the water or the land.
So by the time we get through all of my conditions, I do not think there will be many places in America where fracking will continue to take place.
Sanders' answer, also on CNN.
Senator Sanders,
My answer is a lot shorter. No, I do not support fracking.
For Walter Hang, an Ithaca-based fractivist with the group Toxics Targeting, says that's not enough. He says while Sanders' position on fracking is much more to his liking than Clinton's, he wants to know more about the related pipeline debate. He's conducting a petition drive.
These candidates have to spell out their positions much more clearly to the tens of thousands of fractivists who work night and day for years to require Governor Cuomo to at least prohibit hydrofracking. They're sophisticated, they're knowledgeable, and they need to know what's going on before they cast their votes on April 19th.
Tensions over the issue were highlighted recently when a Greenpeace supporter questioned Clinton about donations from fossil fuel companies. She displayed frustration, saying she was sick of Sanders supporters lying about her record. The Greenpeace member was not related to the Sanders campaign. Hang and other fractivists are planning to hold demonstrations outside Clinton and Sanders events in New York over the next couple of weeks as the primary date approaches. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
This week was busy for former New York Senator Hillary Clinton. The presidential hopeful trekked from Manhattan, where she appeared with Governor Andrew Cuomo, up to Albany, where she met with Democratic lawmakers, then on to Cohoes. At stake, 274 delegates in the April 19th primary. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
The line at Cohoes High School was out the door and down the street, one enthusiastic supporter saying, "We are Hillarized." Inside, the gym scoreboard was set to 45-45, reflecting Clinton's intentions to become the country's 45th president. Why Cohoes? State Assemblyman and former Cohoes Mayor John McDonald explains.
Saturday morning, I get a text, and it was like deja vu 10 years ago. I got a call saying, "We want Hillary Clinton in Cohoes." And as most of you know, she was here 10 years ago fighting for our senior citizens when Medicare D rolled out. So it didn't take me 30 seconds to say, "We want her back here in Cohoes."
The intros and upbeat music fed through the PA system pumped up the crowd. And then, around 7 a.m., an announcer introduced Congressman Paul Tonko and U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
And the next president of the United States, Hillary Clinton.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song.
Before Clinton took the mic, Tonko and Gillibrand welcomed her.
She's been there throughout a career, fighting for America's families.
Hillary has never stopped fighting for us, and we will never stop fighting for her.
Once on stage, Clinton played to the mostly middle-class crowd.
Oh my gosh, it is so great to be in New York and to be up here in the Capital Region.
And down to business, facing a tightening race in her adopted home state against Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, Clinton pledged new jobs to fight climate change. She said she would fix infrastructure by creating jobs and boosting manufacturing across the nation.
I will be the president who brings manufacturing back to upstate New York and America.
She promised if elected, she'll strive in the name of growth and fairness to get pay equity for women, plus a nationwide hike in the minimum wage. Under her watch, companies that received funding from federal, state, or local governments would pay it all back as an exit tax if they moved operations out of the country. Clinton also outlined her education plan, expressed support for teachers, and promised to make college affordable again.
I want to work to get the cost down, so I am asking students to work 10 hours a week, because if they do work at the college or university, that will help lower the cost. And then we can actually get the cost down for more people, and that will help us send more to college. And I will pay for it by taxing the wealthy.
Clinton acknowledged Sanders has the same goal.
Now that means free for everybody, including Donald Trump's kids. I don't think we need to do that.
Under her plan, poor, middle class, and working families would get free tuition. She further envisions capping student loans so they disappear after 20 years and allowing refinancing of those loans. Clinton zeroed in on several issues dear to the masses: fallout from the Great Recession, citizenship, opportunities for people with disabilities, gun safety reforms, religious freedom, and defeating ISIS. And she stuck it to Republicans whenever she had a chance.
So when Donald Trump talks about pulling out of NATO or keeping Muslims out of the United States or even abandoning our allies in the Pacific, that does not make him sound strong. It makes him sound like he's in over his head.
Clinton shared her ultimate goal.
I will get up every single day and work for the results that will make a difference in your lives, to keep us safe and to unify our country.
Clinton left an impression on the crowd. Mindy Weisenhunt of Niskayuna attended the rally with her 16-year-old daughter, Kira, who is university bound.
To find finally see like someone, a woman getting this close to being president, it's really exciting. And the fact that like she can like talk about it so powerfully and stuff is just really inspiring, I think, to a lot of people.
Mother and daughter are encouraged by Clinton's position on student debt and college education. Clinton and Bernie Sanders are poised to debate April 14 in Brooklyn. No plans for Sanders to campaign in the Capital Region have been unveiled yet. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. One of the Democratic presidential hopefuls is calling for the closure of the Indian Point nuclear power plant in Westchester County. His rival says not so fast. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders issued a statement Monday saying he is very concerned that Buchanan-based Indian Point is more than ever before a catastrophe waiting to happen. He cited recent inspections during a planned outage that found 11% of bolts that hold plate inserts together inside the reactor are faulty or missing. Sanders also pointed to tritium-contaminated water that leaked into the groundwater at Indian Point earlier this year. However, his rival, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, does not call for an immediate shutdown of the plant in northern Westchester County. The former New York senator spoke April 4th with Capital Tonight on Time Warner Cable News.
I'm glad he's discovered Indian Point. When I was a senator, I went after oversight, I went after safety. And again, Governor Cuomo is calling it for it to be closed. There's a current Nuclear Regulatory Commission study being undertaken. But we also have to be realistic and say you get 25% of the electricity in the greater New York City area from Indian Point. I don't want middle-class taxpayers to see a huge rate increase. So this has to be done in a careful, thoughtful way.
Jerry Nappi is spokesman for Indian Point Parent Entergy and responds to Sanders' call for shutting down the plant.
Indian Point is reliable. It provides about 25% of the power for New York City and the lower Hudson Valley. And it's safe. And it's verified as safe by inspectors who come to the plant each day from the federal government and could shut the plant down in a moment's notice if they thought it was unsafe.
Sanders says he is the only presidential candidate in either party with a plan to transition away from what he calls dangerous conventional nuclear power. Paul Gallet is president of Westchester County-based Riverkeeper.
We have enough power to close Indian Point and still keep the lights on during the hottest day of the summer, and it'll cost between $0 and $15 a year for the average customer.
Again, Nappi.
Indian Point, when it's online, it emits virtually zero greenhouse gases. So it's an important component to New York State trying to meet its clean energy and clean air goals. You know, there was a smaller plant, a nuclear plant in Vermont, about one-third the size of Indian Point, that closed a couple of years ago. And that resulted in a 7% increase in carbon dioxide emissions.
He refers to Vermont Yankee and a report from the nonprofit Institute for Energy Research. Gallet maintains the plant has a track record of safety problems.
Riverkeeper does not take a position on political candidates, but it does take a position on issues. And on this issue, as I say, facts are facts. So we're hoping that all candidates are going to come to the conclusion that Indian Point is no longer safe, and we will be better off without it.
Meanwhile, Sanders referred to the latest inspections uncovering problems with what are called baffle bolts inside the Indian Point 2 reactor. Entergy undertook inspections that uncovered the issue during a planned refueling and maintenance outage March 7th. Entergy's Nappi speaks to the matter.
Bolt degradation is not unexpected. That's why we inspect those bolts in the reactor. They're on inserts that go in and out of the reactor. So we'll take time to make repairs before putting the plant back online. But, you know, we identified the issue. These are inspections that we committed to do as part of license renewal.
Neil Sheehan is spokesman for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He says the number of problem bolts at Indian Point 2 is higher than when such bolt problems have been uncovered at other plants. Sheehan says the NRC will continue to assess the situation.
Specifically, we will independently determine whether the baffle bolt degradation could have affected the capability of the reactor core barrel to support core cooling during accident conditions. We'll have an inspection report coming out in the May timeframe that will summarize all of our assessments.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Legislative Gazette's political observer Alan Chartok sat down with Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, for his Capital Connection program. One of the things they spoke about this week was the newly enacted $156 billion state budget and the process involved in getting there.
So, Blair, I want to talk to you about the state budget. So it comes out, what, some people say $150 million, some people say $155 million.
Billion.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
You are exactly
And it's
right.
all our, you know, the people who are listening to this show and the rest of New Yorkers, it's their money.
That's right. So they come up with this money, this thing, and what they don't come up with is any kind of ethics reform in the budget package, which a lot of people had expected. And then maybe I'm crazy.
Is that a rhetorical question?
Did you want to say something? Maybe I'm crazy. But Andrew Cuomo gives himself a number of opportunities, one with Hillary Clinton, of all people. They hold up their hands and champion in Rocky fashion and say, we achieved a $15 an hour wage in New York. Did they?
Well, it depends where you live and what year you live in it. You know, the budget, I mean, you sort of set it up perfectly. I mean, really, in some ways, was in the ugliest process I've ever seen. I mean, it was really sort of completely shrouded in secrecy. Lawmakers and the governor did almost everything humanly possible to avoid any public scrutiny of what they were doing. And they not only met in secret, they met in the governor's mansion in secret so nobody could even accidentally see them having discussions. The bills were jammed through at the last minute with no real ability for lawmakers to read the bills, much less analyze them.
And they had a message of necessity attached to them.
That's right.
That.
It was under New York state law, bills have to sit on the legislators' desks for 3 days. And that's the theory is so that they can actually take a look at the legislation they're voting on. However, the Constitution does allow the governor in times of emergency, you know, like attack from a foreign power or whatever, hurricane or something, for the governor to short-circuit that process and issue what's called a message of necessity, which allows the lawmakers to vote on the bills instantaneously. And that's how they did all these budget bills.
Now, sorry to interrupt, but the message of necessity, as you indicate, is supposed to, I think, if you read the Constitution carefully, be reserved for things like tsunamis,
major earthquakes.
And yet, governors for a long time now have been attaching them. Which is the most anti-democratic thing you can think of, small d, because when you do that, as you suggest, you don't give anybody a chance to read it. Now, I believe what the idea, the principle here is get them in the room, as they always have, keep them there all night when they're tired enough and beginning to act like sheep and going, bah. And if anybody dares to say, I want to talk about this, you know, everybody looks at them, hey, I want to go home, what is it? I want to go to sleep. This is terrible, and it isn't improving. It's getting worse.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, it was as bad as anything I've ever seen in the 32 budgets I've watched here. Wow. And if anything, it's the worst. You're absolutely right in terms of the message of necessity. In fairness to Governor Cuomo, he uses the message of necessity far less sparingly than most of his recent predecessors. I mean, when Governor Pataki was governor.
You mean more sparingly. You said less, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Well, if I said that, I meant that.
Well, if I said millions,
sparing.
I meant billions.
Right, fair enough. Thank you for catching me. Yeah, the governor doesn't use it that much relative to his immediate predecessors. But it's a bad process. In fact, they were even moving bills to the floor with messages where huge sections of the bills were omitted. And when the minority party legislators asked the majority party legislators, well, where are these sections? They said, oh, don't worry, it'll come in the final bill at the end. I've seen that occasionally, but it seemed like a common practice this time around. So it's just a bad process. And one of the issues that the governor had proposed be included in the budget was a package of ethics reforms to react to the unbelievable scandals that have rocked the Capitol. And then he promptly dropped the issue, didn't push it, didn't galvanize the public, didn't do anything. And so not surprisingly, it fell off the table as you, I mean, this is a long-winded response to your original question.
Yeah, but
the ethics fell off. And so that was that.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok speaking with NYPERG's Blair Horner. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. to the North Country, where the Plattsburgh Chamber of Commerce has analyzed the volume of traffic traversing the U.S.-Canada border at Champlain to determine whether the exchange rate is having an impact on people traveling south. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The Canadian dollar is at $1.32 to the U.S. dollar. The regional chamber obtained data on vehicle traffic passing through the border crossing at Champlain-Lacolle to determine if the exchange rate has been having a negative impact. Chamber President Gary Douglas notes that there is a perception that when the rate reaches 25% and above, Canadians stop traveling south.
We know, being next to the border and our economy being so dominated by cross-border matters in so many ways, that when the exchange rate shifts very strongly in the U.S. favor and makes things more costly for Canadians spending their dollars in the U.S., that it has an effect. However, we think there's a lot of exaggeration of what that effect is. The Canadian Border Service Agency, they actually track Canadian residents returning. So that factors out Americans. And the number of Canadian visitors returning to Canada up 22% in January. They seem to be coming back in spite of the fact that while the exchange rate has improved some, it hasn't improved dramatically yet.
The chamber just counted border vehicle traffic. It did not determine whether travelers remained in the region, went to the airport, or continued driving to other destinations.
We'd like to have a study that actually over time periodically counts cars in the Target parking lot or cars downtown. I think that'd actually be some very useful information.
SUNY Plattsburgh Department of Economic and Finance Chair Colin Reed is also co-owner of the Champlain Wine Company.
Just from what I'm seeing as a downtown business person, there does seem to be a little bit more of a dearth of Quebec visitors. Now, I know it's the winter months and that sort of thing, but, you know, that's not statistically significant, just anecdotal.
Douglas counters that whether Canadians stay or not, they have an impact on the region's economy.
We don't have a way to track where their ultimate destination is, but we know from experience that the great majority of crossings at Champlain, New York, are coming in and out of the North Country, whether it's on business, whether it's visitors or skiers or shoppers or whatever the case may be. And so it has a profound impact on us. And we know, frankly, even if they're going down the road further, they're going to Albany or Lake George or someplace else, they're going to buy gas here, they're going to stop at the liquor store on the way home, they're going to spend money in this particular area as the gateway area no matter what.
Reed says there have been studies in the Buffalo and Vancouver border regions that do indicate a 30 to 50% reduction in Canadian spending when the Canadian dollar drops to around 67 cents U.S., but he adds that the Plattsburgh area tends to fare better than comparable regions. He has also found that the exchange rate is intertwined with oil prices.
A couple of months ago, I did a column where I graphed the Canadian exchange rate versus the price of oil, and the correlation is almost perfect. So Canada's exchange rate is very much at the whim of oil prices. Now we've seen a firming up of oil prices, and a lot of economists expected this oil glut would last about 18 months to 2 years, because that's how long a well drilled in the shale of North Dakota will continue to pump without having to be re-drilled. So I think we're starting to see stabilization this year and next, and we're starting to see the Canadian dollar reflect that. It's up by almost 10 cents compared to its low in the 67 range just a couple of months ago.
Plattsburgh North Country Chamber officials were scheduled to travel to Gatineau, Quebec on Wednesday to meet with 27 Canadian companies seeking information on investment possibilities in the North Country.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1615. Or just listen on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers.
representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.